Hello, everyone, and welcome to Under the Wire, wherever you're joining us from. I'm actually in Tasmania right now, in Launceston, to be exact, and I'm sitting in an amazing little cottage that was built in the late 1800s and enjoying the cold weather, the rain, and I love Tasmania. I absolutely love Tasmania. Hello, Chaim. It's good to see you. I'm having a very different Under the Wire today because I haven't actually prepared anything. We had a screening of Robert F. Kennedy's documentary on the science behind Gardasil vaccine, or might be more accurate to say the lack of science behind the Gardasil vaccine, last night in Launceston, and it was a fantastic audience. I thank the organizers so much for all their help. They did an amazing job, and the venue is just fantastic. So I had to laugh because one of the local newspapers here, I think it's the Examiner, the Launceston Examiner, I can't remember, they actually wrote an article about the screening, and it was not a terrible article. They had screenshots from the documentary, so they must have looked at it, and they did quote me, though they never interviewed me. And they had, of course, the doctor's interview saying how dangerous this was, and a Labour Party politician saying that this sort of speech should not be allowed. It's always amazing to hear a politician say that nobody should be allowed to speak in a democracy. But what I had to laugh about was that they had that article on their Facebook page as well. And I don't know if the person made this comment after seeing the Q&A that was live streamed on the AVN Facebook page or just after reading the article, but they were making all these claims that, oh, it's got to be in a church. This event has to be in a church. People are so incensed that they don't know where these events are held. And we don't tell people where the events are held for a very good reason, because we protect not only the people who attend, but the venue itself from the phone calls and the abuse of those who believe, like that Labour Party politician, maybe she should think about who she's aligning herself with, those who believe that we should not have the right to discuss these issues. Hey, Pete, how you going? So it was a very good evening. The film, as always, was very well received. I've probably watched it now, I'm going to say somewhere between 8 and 10 times, and every time I watch it, I get something new out of it. The amount of information that's covered in there is just incredible. And I will add some links afterwards, and one of the links will be to that film. I really suggest that if you haven't already seen it, you watch it. It's less than an hour. And Robert Kennedy goes through, from woe to go, the information on the fraud, the lies, and the incredible misery that this vaccine is causing in our young men and young women. And Helen Lobato was on the Q&A panel last night. For those of you who don't know, Helen is an Australian researcher who's written a book called Gardasil, Fast-Tracked and Flawed, all about the history of the Gardasil vaccine from before it was introduced to the introduction of Gardasil 9, which is the vaccine that we're using in Australia right now. It has five more antigens in it than the old Gardasil 4 did. And she was on the Q&A panel, and I'm so grateful that she was there. And I'm losing my train of thought, but she brought something up that I had never heard before. Oh, yes, about, I knew that the age group for the recommended ages for Gardasil was being expanded. Now, originally Gardasil came out and it was recommended for young women only between the ages of 9 and, I don't remember if it was 18 or 19, maybe 20, and then it went to 25. And the reason that it was only the younger people who are being targeted is because they wanted to get people who were so-called sexually naive, so people who hadn't had intercourse yet. And the reason for that is because if you are, and it was known, if you already had an infection or history of an infection with the one of the strains of the human papillomavirus that's in the vaccine, then rather than decreasing your risk of cervical cancer, Gardasil increases your risk by 45%. So they wanted to get young women who had not yet had sex, because it was thought that these women would not yet be infected with the human papillomavirus. Of course, we know that children can be born with HPV. And we also know that in 95%+ of the people who have an HPV infection, and I don't even like calling it infection because there are no symptoms, those whose bodies are host to the human papillomavirus will clear any form of that virus. 95%+ will do it without any problem whatsoever. But what Helen said last night, the government recently said that they're increasing the recommended age for Gardasil to 45. Helen said now they're talking about increasing it to the age of 60. Why? Why in the world would you do that when you know that you could actually be increasing the risk of cancer? Why not just, if you want to, do a blood test and find out if the person has an infection with one of the 9 strains of the HPV that's in the vaccine? And if they are infected, then they're not a good candidate. Wouldn't that be the prudent and probably more cost-effective way of handling this? But that might lead to inconvenient questions about, pardon me, about what this vaccine is actually doing. So I was really amazed to hear that, in a way, and in a way not, because as a vaccine manufacturer, Merck, which makes Gardasil, their only interest, they're not interested in the health of people. And they've proved that time and time and time again, through their lies, through their fraud that has led to the deaths of millions, through the fact that they have paid tens of billions of dollars in fines, which they just pass on to the consumer and to the government, whoever buys their products, because of fraud. So they don't care about the health of people. So what they care about is profit. Their board, they are a publicly held company. Their board is out there to increase their market share and increase their profit year on year. That is their mandate from the shareholders. We want to see increases in our money. We want to make more profit, and therefore anything you can do that will increase profit, we're good with. So Gardasil originally thought it was only going to be targeted at young women, because apparently women are the only ones with cervixes. But then there started to be an idea that we had to vaccinate young men as well. Originally, the reason to vaccinate young men was to protect their future sexual partners. So you vaccinate a young man today so that whoever he sleeps with in the future won't be exposed to the human papillomavirus, even though there are over 200 strains of HPV and the vaccine at that point only contained 4. But that attitude of doing this, taking a risk for yourself in order to protect a future sexual partner and a young boy at the age of 9, 10, or 11, that didn't fly. So Gardasil manufacturers, Merck, went back to the drawing board and they said, we have to find a better reason to increase our market, because we're missing out on 50% of the people here. Only 50% or so are women, and there are so many men, we could be making so much more money. So they created this head and neck cancer issue, which is a big problem in the world. You may not be aware of this, but there are so many people dying of head and neck cancer. And all of that head and neck cancer is being caused by the human papillomavirus. We only just found this out. How lucky we've got a vaccine. So the market increased to boys. Now it's people aged 25 to 45, as well as young people. And according to Helen, and according to the latest information from the government, people up to the age of 60 will be targeted with Gardasil vaccine. The thing is, Gardasil has such a rotten name in the community. And I speak with people all the time, not just people who question vaccines, but a lot of people who don't necessarily question vaccination, and they consistently say that they will not take the Gardasil vaccine. They don't want to have that vaccine. They may take all the others, but not Gardasil. I see that my picture is frozen. I'm not sure why, but I'll see if this fixes itself soon. I'm hoping you can still hear me. Chaim, if you can tell me, if you wouldn't mind, if you can hear me, I'd appreciate it. Otherwise, I'll restart this. Because you don't need to see me. That's okay, as long as you can hear me. So, yes, Penny, me too. Me too. But don't worry. I'm sure they're going to be expanding that. You know, get your Gardasil and flu shot and your pneumococcal vaccine for good measure. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy what's happening out there. But we had some amazing questions from the audience and a lot of very woke people. There was a woman in there who has several children. I don't remember. I think she said four. Okay, great, Adam. Thanks very much. And are you able to see me too? Or it's because on my screen it's frozen. So it doesn't really matter. Like I said, you don't need to see me. That's all good. But okay, good. There you go. I can't see me as long as you can. This woman had been abused, absolutely abused by a hospital many years ago when she took her child there. I don't know what happened, but he may have fallen over and he was bleeding. His mouth was bleeding. And she went into the hospital and the person who was doing triage, I guess, so who was checking people in, asked her if her son was vaccinated. And when she said no, he went harumph and turned away. And that was it. And she was devastated because here her child was bleeding. She was very concerned and focused on her child. And the hospital just basically refused to treat her, or to treat him, sorry. And as a result of that, a lot of people would have shrunken into their shells after something like that happens, but she didn't. She's become very active. She hasn't vaccinated any of her children. And she is out there in the community educating people about what the issues are surrounding vaccination in a loving and non-confrontational way. And people like that are probably the best people to teach others what the problems might be. We don't want people going out there and confronting people and saying they're wrong for vaccinating. That's not gonna win any hearts and minds. That is not what is going to make this issue become, to the mainstream, to the fore. What we need to do is share our knowledge and what we know. And that is something I got last night from a lot of the people there, is they have a lot of knowledge, but they're afraid to speak about it. They're afraid of being judged. They're afraid of being attacked and abused. And what I said to them, I'm going to repeat to you, because I have always found this to be a really good way to approach this issue and any really controversial and polarized issue. And I don't know of any issue that's more polarized than vaccinations, to be honest. Not religion, not law, not anything. What I do and what I suggest that other people do is that instead of accusing anyone, or instead of saying, well, this is my information and you should know this, I mean, I don't think many of us would do that anyway. We're smart people. But what I do is I ask questions. And I find that asking questions is always a great way to arrive at an answer. They would say, for instance, well, I vaccinated all my children and they're fine. I'll say, that's great. I'm really glad your children are fine. I have a child who was vaccine injured, but I realize not everyone's child goes through that. But, I mean, I've done a lot of research in the years since my son was vaccine injured. And I've read a lot of articles from medical journals and books and information. I'd love to talk to you about it. Can you tell me what you've read? What information have you read? And they may say, I didn't read anything. My doctor told me that vaccines are good and I trust my doctor. And then you can say, well, you know, I trusted my doctor too, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't trust your doctor, but do you know how much knowledge on vaccination a doctor gets in their 8 years of medical school? And they'll probably say something along the lines of, well, they study vaccines, they're experts on this issue. And I can say to them then, well, you may not be aware of this, but they study vaccines for less than 4 hours in the 8 years of medical school. And all of that study is not what vaccines are about, what's in them, how they work, and what side effects look like. It is all about what vaccines are given at what age and how to administer them. And that the only side effects that you can get from a vaccine are swelling at the site, fever, and perhaps a bit of grisly crying. That's it. So, you know, if you have read a little bit of information, do you think you might know more than your doctor with all of his training? So ask questions of these people. Get a, you know, if you want to, prepare ahead of time. What this woman said is, for a long time, she carried articles that were highlighted in her handbag. And whenever she would meet someone and they would get into one of these conversations, she would pull out the articles and point to the highlighted sections, and people would read them and they would be absolutely astounded. And that's a good tactic to use too. We can all communicate these issues to people that we meet. We can all, I'm not frozen anymore. Okay. I feel like singing one of the songs from that show. No, but I'll spare you. Excuse me. So we can all share our knowledge in a way that does not put people off, but actually makes them want to learn more. And that's the other point that I want to make. I never try and convince anyone that I'm right. I never try and convince anyone that they shouldn't vaccinate, because that's a losing proposition. The only thing I want to convince people of is that there is knowledge out there that they have not been privy to, that there is information that they, as responsible parents and responsible adults, should make themselves aware of, and that they need to look at both sides of this issue before making a decision, that despite what they're told by the media, the government, and the medical community, when it comes to vaccination, like when it comes to every other issue, there actually are two sides, not one, but two. So I just think that it's, for me, as someone who's been doing this for so many years, it was fantastic to be there in that room full of people who are searching for more knowledge, searching for more information. There was a young woman in the audience, pardon me, who got the Gardasil vaccine when she was 23 years old. She had a pap smear first and got the Gardasil at the pap smear appointment, and her pap smear was clear. She had no problems. 7 months later, when she'd had her three doses, she had another pap smear, and she had an advanced SYN, I think it was SYN 3, which is as advanced, that's considered pre-cancer. And she's had nothing but health issues ever since. And all she gets from the medical community is denial, 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 denial. It had nothing to do with the vaccine. Your problems are your own. They're not the vaccine's problems. And she knew that wasn't right. And she's been working very hard to improve her health. Sadly, she's had 5 miscarriages since she's had the vaccine. She and her husband were both there, and I was able to give her a couple of suggestions for different health practitioners she might want to contact. But these are the problems that the medical community is out there causing, but they have nothing to fix it. They're very good at causing problems, but very terrible at fixing them. And that's not to say that there is no place in society for Western medicine. I think there is. If I was in a car accident, and I've probably used this analogy 50 times, so excuse me if I'm boring you, I'm turning into my grandfather. If you are in a car accident, I would want to go to a hospital where they could fix your broken bones and suture your wounds and do all those things that are necessary in a trauma situation. But I would want that hospital to have a homeopath on staff who might administer arnica or, you know, some other remedy that's needed. I would like them to have a chiropractor so that they could adjust your spine after the accident, which is very important. I would want them to have a range of different practitioners all working integratively, not competitively, to provide the best possible health care in every situation. And right now what we have is a medical fraternity that says there is only one answer to every single health complaint or health challenge or health issue, and that answer is drugs, vaccines, chemotherapy, surgery. And I've got to tell you that not one of those is the right answer in every situation. It may be the right answer in some, but it is not the right answer in every situation. And until Western medicine stops trying to compete and starts trying to integrate and cooperate, more and more people are going to be walking away from Western medical doctors. So, And this is another thing. I talked about this with Helen last night. I think I talked about it with Melanie, who was one of the organizers. And I asked in the audience, how many of you know someone who has been either injured, permanently injured, or killed by a doctor, by a treatment provided by a doctor? And about 80% of the people in the room raised their hands. And that has been my experience in my life, in my family. And that has also been my experience in the community, speaking with people. And what I don't understand is, if 80% of us in the community have had such incredibly negative experiences with Western medicine and have had such terrible outcomes, including death, from medical treatments, why then do we still go to the doctor as the first port of call when something goes wrong, or just for checkups? I have a good medical doctor now. He works in an integrative practice, and I've seen him I've seen him twice in the last year. But I don't see him on a regular basis. When I need health maintenance, I see my chiropractor. When I need nutritional advice, I see a naturopath. When I need something for a chronic condition, I see a homeopath. I have a range of health practitioners that treat different situations, and my children do, my husband does, all of us do. What I don't understand is, if we know that drugs and doctors who are using standard of care medical treatment are dangerous and that they may end up injuring you or killing you, why do we go to them as a first port of call? Why do we continue to see and pay Western medical practitioners when there are very good integrative and holistic practitioners out there? If we started voting with our feet more often, and taking our money where it actually supports our health and doesn't destroy it, I think that the medical profession, which is responsive to the forces of industry and financial issues, I think that they would change very quickly. They're already starting to, but I think we need to push them that little bit harder and that little bit further. And I just think that we need to stop being afraid to make changes in our lives and fire our doctors if they're not doing what we want them to, and not put up with their abuse. When a doctor abuses you or your child, don't just take it. File a complaint with the Healthcare Complaints Commission in your state. They're not all called Healthcare Complaints Commission, but every state has one. File a complaint with a hospital if it happens in a hospital, and demand an answer from the hospital board. And keep pushing until you get satisfaction. It's up to all of us to do this. And this is something that I state over and over and over again, but I think it's so true. It is up to all of us to make these changes in the world so that our children don't have to put up with the crap that we've been putting up with. We owe it to them to be strong and to be brave and to do what's necessary to fix the problems that have been caused over the last 40 to 50 years when it comes to health and medicine. Let's leave our kids a better world than we've got, not one like the one that we're living in, which, while it's beautiful and fantastic and life is wonderful, it certainly is going downhill fast with loss of rights, loss of freedoms, and loss of health. Our children are part of the sickest generation ever on the face of this earth. And that is a pretty amazing thing when we have so much wealth and so much abundance around us. None of that makes a difference if we don't have the health that we deserve and that we're born with. So I just want to say that. Now, today is my day off. I'm traveling down from Launceston to Hobart. And I got to tell you, I just absolutely love Tasmania. I would move here tomorrow. I love the weather, even the gray, cloudy, rainy weather. I love it. The cold, it's just my kind of place. But unfortunately, I have to live in paradise up on the North Coast. But I'm traveling down to Hobart today. I'm hoping to take in some music tonight. And if I get there on time and it's not raining, see the Salamanca markets. And then tomorrow, We have a screening of the Robert F. Kennedy documentary that we just screened in Launceston last night in Hobart. It's an afternoon screening. I will put a link here. Adam, if you're still there, would you mind putting a link to the Eventbrite page, please, for the event? If not, I'll do it later. That's not a problem. And so tomorrow we will be selling tickets up until the doors open. Hobart's not that big a place that you can't get there on time. And the doors open a half an hour before the screening starts, so you have time to get there. We would love to see you and to have your questions and to have your support. One of the things that happened last night is we made the announcement that Vaxxed 2 is going to be coming to Hobart in early December, sorry, in Launceston in early December, and it's also coming to Hobart. And we asked that people who were interested in helping out with this screening, which is going to be blockbuster, raise their hands. And Melanie, who is organizing, got an awful lot of support last night. So she's assembling a great little team there to take care of the screening in December. We are hoping to have as many screenings as possible in that first week. It launches in about a week's time, in about 8 days or 10 days time in the United States. But we are going to be the first people able to see it in the Southern Hemisphere. So thank you, Adam. I appreciate it. Adam's just put the link to the Eventbrite page where you can book tickets. There are still a few tickets left for Hobart. Hobart was closer to selling out than Launceston was. And we would love to see you there. We would love to see a sellout venue. The information that Kennedy shares in this, as I said before, is amazing. But we would also like people who are there tomorrow to lift up their hands. And I will ask at the time if they would like to assist in getting a screening happening in the Hobart area in the first week in December. If you are watching this and you would like to have a screening in your area, contact us at avnenquiries@avn.org.au. That's avnenquiries@avn.org.au. Let us know what area you live in, whether you think you can source a venue, and how much time you can devote to this. This is not a small ask. This is a big ask. We can hopefully help you get a team together that will help you, but because we can't be in 15 places at one time, we need people who can do this and be trusted to do this on their own. And by trusted, I don't mean that we don't trust you. I mean that there is an awful lot of work. And if we start selling tickets, you can't step out. You need to commit. And it's going to be done in a short space of time because we've only got just a bit over a month to get all of this together. So we will work 150% for you. And we're asking that you work 150% to make this screening the best possible screening ever. So we will be doing as many of these around Australia in that 1 week as we possibly can. And if you are not one of the organizers, please help, come along, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your associates, be brave. Pardon me, I'm getting a very dry throat here. Be very brave, because this film, the stories, this is the people's voice. This is the stories that the media, the mainstream medical community, and the government want to silence. And we need to give them a voice. We need to let other people know, in order to protect their children, what has happened as a result of vaccination. So please send us an email if you want to help out, and we will be back to you, we promise. I can't think of Toowoomba. Chaim, if you want to do it in Toowoomba, you are the responsible person. You contact us and let us know. I don't see why not Toowoomba. But we are going to be doing Brisbane and the Sunshine Coast and the Gold Coast, so why not Toowoomba? I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You need to source the venue. You need to contact us and get involved. And thank you for that. I think that's great. So I can't really think of anything else. I do have a very long drive ahead of me. Tasmania is small, but it still takes a while to drive from Launceston to Hobart. So I'm going to keep this morning's Under the Wire fairly short. Next week, we have a very special Under the Wire. I'm interviewing David Steffen. For those of you who, and possibly his wife, I'm not sure. For those of you who don't know them, the Steffens are a Canadian family who's don't vaccinate any of their children, and their son, I don't know exactly how old he was. I should know this. I think he was 4 at the time. He was getting sick for a while. They thought it was croup. And they had a friend who was a nurse who was helping them with the treatments. They took him to see doctors several times, and the doctors showed no concern. And one night, they lived in rural Canada. They still do. They live in rural Canada. And one night, the son got very sick. They called an ambulance. The ambulance came. The ambulance was not equipped with the right size resuscitator to help this young boy breathe. He was having problems with breathing, and sadly he passed away. Yes, Chaim, that's the address. Sadly he passed away, and as if it was not hard enough losing a beloved child, the parents were charged with this child's death. The hospital said that he had died of meningitis, and that the parents were responsible because they hadn't vaccinated and because they hadn't taken certain treatments. So it was a total deflection of blame from the lack of equipment to the fact that these loving, caring, intelligent, and informed parents had done their very best to help their child. So there's a long 7-year period of abuse by the government, by the community, fraud by the coroner, all sorts of things that have happened. And David has just been exonerated by the courts in Canada. And the Canadian government looks like they're going to be appealing. It is a very sad story. It is hard enough to lose a child without having to go through all that too. So I'm looking forward to speaking with David, and I'm looking forward to bringing his story to you. I guess some people could think of it as a precautionary tale, but I think of it more as a tale to activate us and to let us know that we need to unite. We need to band together and form a wall of protection against these forces that are out there trying to destroy us and destroy our families in the name of profit. So I hope you join us next Saturday. I hope you let your friends and everybody else know about this. And I look forward to seeing you next week. I'm going to get on the road in a few minutes, and I will see those of you in Hobart who are coming to the screening tomorrow there. And I look forward to it. Thank you very much from Under the Wire, and I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.